Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined by someone I admire a lot, a returning guest, senior managing editor for the Athletics NHL coverage, the one and only James Myrtle. Thanks so much for joining the show. How's the season been for you covering the Leafs? And it feels a bit different than maybe years prior.
Yeah, it's been a I think it's been a pretty busy season. Like there's been a lot that's happened around the league this year. Leafs in particular, like slow start, and then they've had some spurts lately where they've looked better, and there's been some surprising things like Samsonov playing his way onto waivers and then coming back. And so, it's there's I'm really looking forward to the playoffs. Like honestly, like right we're at the point now, mid-March, where we're just counting the days. There's 16 Leafs games left until we get to the playoffs, and they're going to play Boston or Florida in the first round, and both of those are fantastic matchups. Boston, I'm hoping for Boston just because there's been so many great series with the Leafs and the Bruins, going back to 2013, that I'd like to see that. And if the Leafs could ever get past Boston, then I think that would be a great story. And then the Florida storyline is, I mean, they're potentially the best team in the East, best team in the league, possibly, and the Leafs lost to them last year. So there's lots of good storylines there too.
Where do you, you went straight to the red meat, as we say, but just where do you, how do you find this team matches up with those two teams and compared to maybe years prior where they have played them in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, based so far in the regular season, this Leafs team has been a little bit weaker than the last 2 or 3 years. So and I think that the physicality and the defensive play and the way we saw it last year in the playoffs with Florida, like I don't think stylistically Boston or Florida are very good matchups for the Leafs. Like I don't think that that's like the ideal opponent who they would want to play. I think they'd rather play a more wide open opponent. I think a lot of the storyline is going to be about Brad Treliving comes in as GM, changes the DNA of the supporting cast a little bit, gets some more. They're looking for these guys to be playoff type players. Edmondson, Bertuzzi, Domi, Reeves, Lyubushkin, and they're hoping that that toughness, even if they've taken a little bit of a step back in terms of how many points they're going to have during the regular season and their goal differential, they're hoping that it'll be a more battle ready team in the playoffs. I think that's going to be a big time narrative going into it, whether it's Boston or Florida. But I think, you there's the two things I'll be looking for is, can the stars come through and deliver? Can they have a huge series against a Boston or a Florida? Because that's been a big problem for the Leafs in the postseason, is just goal generation. And the other thing too is, can they get their special teams performance to be better? Because the power play seems to fall off every year in the playoffs as part of that lack of scoring from the star players. And the penalty kill has been a problem all year this year. I think the penalty kill, I looked it up, it's been the Leafs penalty kill has been as bad as it's been in like 12 years or something like that, where it's at right now, 76%. And it's been a problem in the playoffs. So can they find a solution for that here down the stretch?
What do you make of maybe the other narrative as well, like alongside that about like, getting guys like Bertuzzi, Domi, Lyubushkin, Edmondson that maybe they're not as built for the regular season, but they're more built for the playoff style physicality. Like, do you buy into that at all in terms of the way the team's built?
The thing I would say, like they tried this last year too, right? Like bringing in Achari and Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen, and like it's not like this is a brand new idea for the Leafs that they needed. I mean, even go back further when they were bringing in Wayne Simmonds and Giordano, and like the Leafs have been trying. Nick Foligno, when they brought him in, there was a lot of talk about they've been trying to make the team tougher going into the playoffs for a number of years now, and it hasn't worked. Obviously, I mean, they got through one round last year. I think some of the deadline additions they made last year were made it made an impact and allowed them to beat Tampa in the first round last year. But I think at the end of the day, the pieces that they added this year probably not going to be huge difference makers. And if the stars no show, they're not going to be able to win a round. And if they're really good, then they will. I mean, we've seen that all season. It's been a huge year for Matthews and Nylander. If they're able to translate that into dominating a playoff series, then that's going to have a way bigger impact than, who's playing on the third D pair or whatever.
Yeah, and then with that, like obviously they've had monster years before, but I don't think Nylander and Matthews, like Matthews might have 70 goals, Nylander career year as well. Do you think just like what do you think might be the difference in terms of them getting over the hump? Do you buy that just that they're at that level where it doesn't matter that maybe their past playoff downfalls come into play?
I don't, I it's pretty hard to predict what they're going to do in the playoffs, to be honest. I mean, it's certainly, I think it's a good sign that they've had such strong regular seasons. But you know, I think the other thing that could play out here is that the Leafs could be a relatively easy team to match up against. I mean, if you're Boston or Florida and you're going into the series, you're going to throw absolutely everything you have at the Matthews line. If Matthews and Marner are on the same line, and you're not going to feel as threatened by the other lines, and that's going to be where Tavares and Nylander and Bertuzzi, and depending on how the lines are shaped, those other players are going to have to step up if Matthews and Marner are negated by the checking lines, by the Barkovs and McAvoy and the good defensive players on the other teams. They're going to need the supporting cast to step up. So that could be where Bertuzzi and Domi are huge, is score some ugly goals. And of late, one of the most encouraging things, the Leafs have been on this run. I think they're what, 15, 5 and 1 in their last 21 games since the All-Star break. What's been encouraging is there has been some secondary scoring. You've seen goals from Robertson. You've seen a lot more from Bertuzzi. You've seen Bobby McMahon step up. That's really what they're going to need if there are games where Matthews and Marner aren't able to break through.
How worried are you about their decor? Just obviously they've had a kind of a jumbling a lot of guys in and out. Benoit has been a bit of a nice story, but now he's been out of the lineup, although I think he's playing tonight. But just how, like compared to Boston, Florida, is that maybe the biggest area of weakness?
Probably, yeah. And it's right at the top of the blue line, right? Like if they're playing Riley with Lyubushkin, they're not using that pairing as a shutdown pair. They're not playing that pairing against other teams' top lines. So then you need another pair that can do that. Like who, what D pair do you feel good about putting out there against Pastrnak? Or look at the year that Reinhardt's had in Florida. They need someone that, and you even look at the Carolina game that they blow the 2-goal lead. They blow they have that run of 3 goals, and they should have been able to close that game out, but they don't have great personnel in those situations. So, you know, TJ Brody's had such a tough season. He had a hard time in the playoffs last year. So if it's not him, maybe they need to create some kind of a line. You know, I think Jake McCabe's played well enough the last couple of months that you feel good about him being on that line, but who do you play him with? You know, do you try him on the right side with Riley? Do you bump Edmondson up there? Do you go back to a Benoit McCabe unit? I think they're going to have to try something different than TJ Brody, because it just feels like, you know, he's 33, he's almost 34, last year of his contract. He's given the Leafs a really good 3 years. And this last year, this fourth year of the deal, his age is showing and the wheels aren't there for him. He's not a big guy. He's had some trouble moving the puck and battling in front of the net. And, you know, if they do play him on the top pair on a shutdown type pair, my concern would be that, you know, the big guns for Boston and Florida are going to be able to walk all over the Leafs.
Are you saying like they should take him all the way out of the lineup, or is it more just putting
No.
him down?
Yeah, I think if Brody's on your third pair with Lilgren or something, he's going to be pretty effective. So, you know, or even you put him back, maybe you put him back with Riley, and that's, I think that if Brody's down the lineup, he looks a lot better than if he's playing 22 minutes on the top pair against other teams' top lines, top penalty kill unit. Like he doesn't look like he's able to do it anymore. So the tough thing is they didn't really add anyone that can do that at the deadline. And I understand there were limitations on what was available, but I think you're right that that's the biggest hole or the biggest weakness on this team. And they've got decent depth on the blue line. And if you look at statistically, their performance that they get, say, from their third pair is pretty good. The performance of the second pair with Riley and Lyubushkin on it, since in the 7 games that Lyubushkin's played, is really good. It's really just at the top end that they can't match up with other teams.
You alluded to the deadline, and I know you weren't maybe necessarily the biggest fan of Treliving's deadline. How would you maybe evaluate it, and do you think he maybe missed a chance to really augment, in this case, like you're talking about the blue line, get a guy that really changes the dynamics of their back end?
Well, I would even expand it out from just the deadline because, you know, Klingberg goes down early mid-November, goes on LTIR surgery. They get that 4 point, I think it's 4.15 is what he was making. They get that against the cap, and all the talk in November is Tree Living's going to fix the defense. The Leafs are going to bring people in. They're going to use that 4 million to improve the blue line. So they had, you know, I mean, do the math. They had before the deadline, they had what, 3.5 months that they could have made an upgrade, and they weren't able to do it. So I don't even think it was just what happened in the 4 or 5 days before the deadline. I think they needed to try and find a top 4D in that space of time with the assets that they had and the cap space that they had. But the big one for me is like the Leafs weren't capped out this time. Like they didn't, they had money that they could have brought in a difference maker of a defenseman, and they weren't able to find one. They weren't able to find a trade that they liked. And they ended up with two guys who are probably the best fit on a third pair in Lyubushkin and Edmondson. Edmondson was only playing 16 minutes a game in Washington. Washington looks like they might be a team that makes the playoffs. Yeah. But he was basically a third pair guy. He's had a lot of injuries. He's had a lot of back problems. I know that that's one of the reasons that Montreal moved away from him. But they just might have to try him higher in the lineup because he's a guy who's had some deep playoff runs, won a cup with St. Louis, went to the final with Montreal. And maybe when you get into the playoffs and things tighten up, they might have to just rely on him a little bit more than he has been this season. So
with that, like, you know, obviously I think a lot of the talk around Tree Living at the deadline was about that first round pick and maybe going a bit more all in. Do you feel as though he missed an opportunity to maybe put more of the, you know, put all the chips in and go for it this season?
Well, I think what I would say is if there was an opportunity to get a defenseman who could play in their top four, especially someone who had term, then I would have given up the first round pick. So, you know, that had to be the kind of deal. I know I remember on the deadline day or the couple of days leading up to deadline, Leafs fans were all talking about Parayko in St. Louis and that being the kind of player that they need. And that makes sense. I mean, Pareko's had some injuries, but he's also a guy that's playing 24 minutes a night and is brings size and physicality and a little bit of a gamble with his contract and the term left. But I don't know. I never heard that there were any kind of talks between the Leafs and the Blues, and I don't know that St. Louis is anxious to move off of him. So, but I think I expect that regardless of what happens in the playoffs, the offseason conversation around the Leafs is going to be they're looking for a defenseman again. Like that's the way that it's going to be. And it's been a hole ever since Jake Muzzin went down. And at the beginning of last season, they've had a hard time filling that.
Do you think with that, like obviously the back end, as you're talking about being a bit of an area of weakness, that like when you look at Austin Matthews and what he's doing this year, it's, I mean, it might be one of the best seasons of, you know, the last 20, 30 years. In a way, do you think a superstar like him can almost outweigh the defensive issues and almost if he just takes this team on his back, lead them maybe to a cup or very deep in the playoffs?
Yeah. And I mean, if you have a 70 goal player game breaker who is good defensively, who can play in all situations, that's a pretty big weapon to have, you know. And if you're playing him 22, 23 minutes a night in the playoffs, I mean, he's out there for more than a third of the game. So yeah, I think that those minutes when Matthews and Marner are out there on the ice together, like the Leafs are typically pretty dominant in those minutes. Now this year, they haven't been as dominant as they've been in some years past, but it's a huge factor for the Leafs for sure. And, you know, and you're going to see in the playoffs, they're going to go down to a short bench, but as we've seen over the last, was it 7 years, seven playoff years that's in the Matthews era, like it can be hard for those players to do it all. Yeah. But I do think that it's fair to expect more from the Leafs' best players. You know, that's the way they're built. Like they need them to play well. Like, and when I say play well, I mean, like they need to, you look at some of the playoffs that some of Vegas's best players or Tampa's best players or Edmonton's best players have had the last 2 or 3 years or Colorado's best players. Like they've had series where they've had 12, 13, 14, 15 points. And we haven't seen that from the Leafs' big players. And that's what they need. They need someone to come out and completely dominate a series.
With Matthews, like maybe a bit bigger picture, like is he in the contention to be like already maybe the best Leaf of all time?
Yeah, what do they call that? It's not the goat, it's like the gloat or something, greatest leaf of all time. I think that that's a
Well,
Jonas what? That's a
I
Jonasism
love
there
that.
for you. Like, yeah. I mean, there's yeah, if they're gonna be thinking about putting more statues on the Legends Row in front of the arena, I think that the sculptor should start thinking about how what he wants the Matthews one to look like. And I mean, the big thing for those guys is gonna be if they stay, like if Marner signs another deal. You're going to look at the Leafs record book and it's going to have Matthews and Marner all over it because I mean, Sundin is basically owns the record book in terms of, and Matthews can probably pass Sundin in all-time goals as a Leaf relatively soon. You know, the fact that he signed that extension mean it's, so then the question is, does Marner re-sign? And if he does, probably it's going to be 1-2 Matthews and Marner for the points, all-time in points for the Leafs. By the time those guys are in their very early 30s. So if they stay even longer than that, I mean, they can just completely blow away the records that Sundin put up.
With the Marner, obviously his future is 1 year left on his deal after this season. Where do you see those two sides between him and the Leafs, and how likely do you think he signs an extension?
I think that the playoffs are big. I think they're big for the whole team, and I think they're big for Marner. So, you know, going, I don't think an extension is. I mean, it hasn't been talked about. It can't even be signed until July 1, but I think they want the season to play out. They want to see how the playoffs look. And, you know, because I think if the Leafs are really disappointing in the first round of the playoffs, there's going to be changes. And that's not just a Marner thing. I think, you know, they're going to look at a lot of different things. And if they're disappointing, I expect the team's going to be a lot different next year. You know, the
And
coach could be different, the goalie could be different, the D, as we talked about, is going to be different. And I think that, you know, potentially the core four could be different.
with that, like you talk about the coach, like how much is Sheldon Keefe's future just completely dependent on how the Leafs do this in the playoffs? And like, let's say if what I'm kind of curious to get your take on is, let's say they win a round, beat Boston, and then lose to Florida or vice versa. Is that enough for him, or what's the expectations for this Leafs team?
I don't know. I mean, they did give the extension to Sheldon Keefe and it was more than a 1 year extension. So he does have some term there. But I think it's fair to say if they don't get out of the first round that he's going to be in big trouble. I mean, frankly, I thought Keefe was going to be in big trouble with the GM change and everything that was happening. It was interesting that they decided to commit to him the way they did. But it's been one of the criticisms I know that, you know, the fan base has had is that Keefe's been a really good regular season coach and his record is excellent. I think he has like the best record of any coach that's coached 200 games or something in their career. If you look at the all-time NHL list, like his the points percentage for him has been fantastic. But you know, as you know, like, and Keefe became the Leafs coach in November 2019, so it's been like not even 4.5 years, and already he's like one of like the five most tenured coaches in the NHL. So there's just not that long of a shelf life for coaches. So I'd be very surprised if they lose in the first round and they brought him back.
Would that be a fair criticism in your mind? Like if he is like canned after the season, if they lose in the playoffs, and let's say Marner, Matthews, don't play very well, is that on, like how much of that is on the coach in your mind?
Yeah, I think that the star's performance isn't necessarily on the coach. Like I think that he's set the table for those guys to have good line mates and play big minutes in every postseason, and they've kind of let the organization down in not being better in those moments. So I think more the criticism of Keefe is that in some of the series he's played in, he's been out coached, and you know, in terms of you know, I mean, like I think back to the series against Montreal, and they, you know, Joe Thornton's out there and on the top power play unit, and it's just not working. And it feels like they stick with it. And I mean, that's going back. I mean, you can cherry pick lots of different examples from the playoff series. The series they lost to Columbus was ugly. It was did not reflect very well on the coaching staff. So there's 100% a lot riding on this. That said, I think Sheldon Keefe's a good coach. I don't think you can have the kind of seasons like they're going to have another 100-point season this year. That's going to be, I believe, four in a row. That's hard to do that, no matter who, what talent you have on the ice as a coaching staff to be that consistent. So I don't think Keefe's, if he does lose his job, is going to be out of a job for very long. It's just that with a new GM and if they don't have success again in the playoffs, it's going to be, they're going to have to change some things. And as we see every year in the NHL, the coach is like the easiest thing to change.
And with that, like obviously, Brendan Shanahan's also been with the Leafs organization for a long time. What
Yeah, it's
happens
10
there?
years.
Yeah.
10 years in next month in April. So yeah, it's a solid decade there.
And obviously they have a new, CEO coming in. Is that like he obviously let go of, well, I don't know if he let go, but the Dubas kerfuffle and how it played out there, but it does sound like Tre Living's good for a little while. I doubt they fire him after one season, but what happens there if the Leafs don't do well with Brendan Shanahan?
I have no idea. I mean, it's the this ownership group of the Leafs MLSE is really hard to read because it's kind of like a three-headed monster with Bell and Rogers and Larry Tenenbaum. And for people who don't know, Bell and Rogers own collectively 75%, so they split that, so it's whatever 37.5% each, and then Larry Tenenbaum has the last 25%. So they need at least two parties to agree on what happens, and it can be really hard to get a read on because you might hear one of those people in the ownership party, one of those groups wants to do one thing, but then you hear another side wants to do something else. And I think that that's part of what likely happened with Dubas is that, they didn't extend him going back before he ended up getting let go last year. And, some of what has been out there is that Rogers was one of the groups that didn't want to extend him. Now, I don't know like where everyone weighed in on everything, but all that is to say it's hard to get a read on how that three-headed ownership group, how they're going to react and what they're going to want to do if it's a really disappointing postseason. But I suspect they're going to want changes. And the question for ownership will be, is it enough change if we're changing the coach and maybe one of the marquee players? Like, is that going to be enough or do they want more than that? And I think Shanahan built up really good standing in the organization just with when he came in, the team was a complete mess. I mean, they were a disaster, and they had been a disaster for a while. If you look back at 2014, and he was able to chart the course for the rebuild and turn them into a good team. But at some point, if you don't get over the hump in the postseason, there's going to have to be even bigger changes made.
How much do you think, like, throughout the Dubas era, Lamoriello, now with Trivium, like, how much of a paintbrush does, in your mind, knowing the ins and outs of the Leafs, did Brendan Shanahan have on roster decisions and even on the complexion of this team this year with Brad Tre
Oh,
Living?
I he's involved for sure. He's involved. Yeah. So it's not he's not like a figurehead president, and he's been involved in the past too. And there's only one person, I think, that's had their fingerprints on all of the various things that have, Brendan Shanahan was responsible for bringing in Lou Lamoriello, for bringing in Mike Babcock, for deciding Kyle Dubas was going to be the GM when he did, for deciding Kyle Dubas wasn't going to be the GM when he did. For deciding on Brad Tre Living, bringing Sheldon Keefe back, for sticking with the core four, all of that comes back to Shanahan for sure. He's been a very, very influential figure, for better or worse, and I know Leafs fans are frustrated, but I think that Brendan Shanahan built himself a lot of cachet with that ownership group, just with taking them from the basket case that they were to where they are now. But 10 years is a long time. And it'll be interesting to see, with the new CEO, Keith Pelley, coming in and if they do decide to make bigger changes. My guess is not, but we'll see. It can be a hard thing to get a read on.
I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the core four and where you stand right now on just that situation. What do you think? Like, do you think it's obviously Tavares is coming off his deal next year, but is it possible that with Nylander, maybe Marner and Matthews over $10 million in annual salary that the Leafs can win a Stanley Cup with that makeup in the current NHL with the salary?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there have been teams that have won. I mean, like Pittsburgh's a good example where they won with a lot of their cap dedicated to four or five players. So if you look at it as a percentage of cap, like it's been done before, and there's been teams that have been really close to that as well. So I don't think it's impossible. I just think that you need those players that you're spending 50% of your cap on to deliver, which has been a problem. and you need the supporting cast to be able to chip in as well. And at times that's been a problem. So it's been very, very interesting that they've stuck with the same group. And it's not even a core four, it's a core five, because Riley's part of that too. Yeah. It's just core five doesn't rhyme, so we don't use it as much. But it's a core, yeah. It's been interesting that they've stuck with those five players for so long together. Like Tavares comes in 2019, I believe?
18, 19, yep.
Oh, so he comes in, yeah, right, 2018. Yep. He signs, and they that group's been together for so long now. Like that 2018 feels like a million years ago. Like it's just like there, I bet you if you go back and you look at other teams' rosters, 2018, 19, I don't know if there's anybody that has five core players that are the same. It's probably unlikely. Like turnover is so high, and it's Tampa? Very interesting.
Yeah, that's
that's a good one. That's a likely, you know, Vasilevsky, Kucherov, Point, you know,
Hedman, that's it. I think that's,
unless you count like a Sorelli or like, you know, some of those like deeper cuts. But yeah, like it's not very common in the NHL that the group of star players, and the caveat I would say with Tampa too, is like they had success, like they won, like that's a bit different situation. There's probably hasn't been a situation where a team hasn't won and they've kept such a, even like I've looked really closely at this, like the two examples that I think if you're the Leafs organization, you're looking at like Washington, who stuck with some of their core players for a long time, and they finally broke through and won in 2018 when Ovechkin was, what, 31? You know, it was an older player, 32.
Yeah.
But if you look, like Washington didn't keep the core. Like, you know, by the time they won, like it was Backstrom and Ovechkin were still there, but they had turned over a lot of the other pieces. Like Mike Green wasn't there. Nope. The goaltending was different. Like they had changed a lot of over the time. But when, you know, when Washington had been a dominant team back in, you know, remember those series they were playing against like Montreal and Pittsburgh in 2009, 2010. Like I was at some of those series and covered some of those series, and everyone was like, Washington's this juggernaut team, and they couldn't get it done. And then you fast forward, you know, like 8-9 years of heartbreak later, they finally win.
Mm-hmm.
And the other team is St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis went a long time where they didn't win and went to the final and didn't win. And then they surprisingly broke through in 2019. So that's what Shanahan is hoping for, is that you give them enough chances that this group's going to break through. And part of the reason that Shanahan believes that is that he saw it in his career. You know, he was the guy that came in late to that Detroit team. You know, the first year he went in there, they won. But that was a team where people were saying, you know, like, Yzerman can't get it done, and like this group can't win. And you look back and it looks really silly. I remember people saying Datsyuk couldn't get it done in the playoffs, and like there was criticism of those Detroit players. So that's what Shanahan believes, because he's seen it. I mean, he was even part of the Canadian Olympic team that had disappointed. He went in 2002 and they broke that. So he saw that too. Everyone was saying Canada can't get it done, and here's why. And then they do it. So, you know, he believes that if you stick with the group, they'll figure it out. But I think that we're at the point now where if they lose in the first round, it's going to be time for more substantial changes.
I mean, would you make a change like going into next year, just knowing that Tavares has 1 year left on his deal? Because that essentially breaks up some of the core five, as you said.
Yeah, I guess the question is like, you don't want to punt on next season, right? So you still, I don't, it's really going to, honestly, it's going to depend how the playoffs play out. Like, I don't think that they're making any decisions until they see what happens here. So I would be jumping ahead to make any kind of pronouncements on what they're going to do. But it's very interesting, you know, if the cap jumps by $4.5 million, you know, by the full 5% each of the next couple of years, and then Tavares's $11 million comes off, they could be in a situation 2 years from now where they're drowning in cap space.
Mm-hmm.
But the question then is like I've been looking at the UFA defensemen who are available this coming summer, and there's not a lot there that excites you. There's you know, it's like DeMello, or, you know, like there's a couple players who would be okay, but they're going to get overpaid and they're going to get term and a lot of dollars. And I'm not sure that the answer for the Leafs is there. So even if you, so if we skip ahead 2 years from now, a year and a half from now, when Tavares' deal is up, Does Tavares come back on like a sweetheart contract? Does he sign for $2.5 or $3 million as like kind of like to close out his career and you put him on the third line? Maybe that helps you, but you got all this cap space, but are you going to have something to spend it on that is going to make a big impact?
Only time will tell. Before I let you go, James, I just have a quick question for you, just because I think it's always interesting to see where different reporters that cover different teams also see other teams as well. And this one's specifically towards Canadian teams. Who, in your mind, going into the playoffs, who's the best team in Canada?
I'm a BC guy, so I don't want to rain on their parade too much, but I would not pick Vancouver. I think that some of like the regression that's been talked about all season, we're starting to see it now. Last I looked, they were something like 10, 9, and 2 in their last 21 games. Like they've really flattened out. Besser's really slowed down. I think they have a real solid team, but I think that you look at the best teams in the West and it's going to be tough. I honestly, and their team's not perfect, but I think I would pick Edmonton just with McDavid, Draisaitl, the way Hyman's playing. They've been getting decent goaltending from Skinner. And I'm a big fan of Chris Knobloch too. I think that was a great hire by them bringing him in as coach. I covered him when he was a junior coach. I remember covering him in the Memorial Cup way back in,
Oh, wow.
I want to say 2011. I got to know Chris a little bit there. He
Roger.
was. He it was in Mississauga, but he was coaching Kootenay, I believe, if I remember correctly. And at that point, he's a really young guy. Like I think he might be younger than I am, to be like, and he was just very cerebral, very impressive. The players loved him. And I just remember thinking that here's a guy that's like going somewhere. He's in the Memorial Cup, he's in his early 30s coaching a team, and he's going to be an NHL coach at some point. And it took until, he had some time he spent in the AHL with Hartford and everything, but I think that was a great hire by them, and the team just did a 180 with him there as the coach, and I wouldn't underestimate that. They still got holes, like Cody Ceci's playing too big of a role there for my liking. Some of their depth on up front. I like the move for bringing in Henrique. Like their lines look like a lot more well balanced now. And I mean, probably the toughest thing for Edmonton is just going to be the path that they're going to have to try and win, because they could get Vegas in the first round. And you look at the loaded up Vegas, and if they get Stone back, and like that's going to be a really tough, crazy first round series for a team as good as Edmonton. But even if you get out of that, Colorado looks good, Dallas looks good, Winnipeg's not going to be an easy one. So I would pick Edmonton, but I don't think the odds for any of the Canadian teams are going to be super, super high. I think it's going to be. I certainly would love to see it though. It would be fantastic for the NHL and for hockey in Canada if we could get an Edmonton Toronto final,
Oh,
or
I think
like
about
a
it all the
Winnipeg Toronto, Vancouver Toronto. Like, can you imagine a Vancouver Toronto final? I remember that series in 94. It was a third round because at the time Toronto was in the Western Conference, believe it or not. I was 13 years old. I remember watching Leafs Canucks, and I grew up in BC, and my mom was from Toronto, so I have like uncles and people in my family who are from Toronto, and the other half of my family's in Canucks fans. And watching that series was a lot of fun, and it was amazing. And we just haven't really had anything like that since. And I'm of the belief, honestly, that like I'd love to see a Canadian division. Like that year when they had a Canadian
I loved
division,
her.
it was too much. Like it was every single game, but. I just, as someone who grew up in Western Canada and who's lived in Toronto for 20 years, I love all the rivalries that are there. You go to a Leafs game in Calgary or Vancouver or Edmonton, and it's just completely full of Leafs fans. And it's like some of the best atmosphere that you can get in the NHL. And getting that in a cup final is like something I'd love to see, in my lifetime, but like hopefully sooner than that. Like hopefully in the next, like 5 or 6 years, it would be great.
Yeah, I feel like Oilers Leafs has been a cup final for so many fans the past like 3, 4 years. Just, I mean, maybe not the Canadian division, but hopefully that happens. As a Jets fan myself, Winnipeg beating the Leafs in the final would be probably the sweetest moment of my fandom. So I hope that happens. But thanks so much, James, for doing this. Anyway, before I let you go, anything you want to plug for the Athletic, Leafs Report, anything at all?
Yeah, I would just say I would encourage people who haven't looked yet, come check out what we're doing at The Athletic. We have, 35 hockey writers. We have people in 22 markets. I my role now is working as an editor with all of our group. I love our staff, our writers, our editors. I think we have such a great team covering the NHL. So if you haven't seen it before, check it out. You can download the app. You know, some of our stories now are appearing on Apple News, NewYorkTimes.com, and it's been a really exciting year for us. And we're gearing up and planning for the playoffs right now. And we're gonna have, you know, dozens of writers out there covering the playoffs within, you know, a few weeks here, and it's gonna be really exciting.
Well, for your sake, I hope the Leafs go all the way to the finals and play the Canucks and have a cool series for you. We'll see if that happens. But James, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this, and best of luck the rest of the season.
No problem.